Tonight we have a treat. Kavita sent us some recordings of Muktananda, or of Yogananda, made in 1947, in the 1940s. My first teacher was Yogananda. I think I was 14 at the time. And I remember I sent away for this long playing record at the time, the 33 RPM one. And the three chants I remember most were, "Oh God Beautiful," "In the Temple of Silence," and "I Will Be Thine Always." I remember hearing "Oh God Beautiful" for the first time. I remember the hairs on my arms stood on the end. I felt such love and ecstasy. Recently, Joanne and some of the others, Tina, Joan, have heard these chants, and Janet. Most have loved them after a little prodding. I think Joanne had to listen to them about 10 or 15 times before she started loving them. Joan loved them right away. I don't think Janet will ever like them. But we'll see. Remember, he's my first teacher, and Robert's second teacher. Robert stayed with him for 6 or 8 months until Yogananda kicked Robert out and told him to go to India. I want you to listen to these chants, not with your ears, but with your heart. Listen to the words. Listen to his passion. His voice sounds a lot like Sun San Sunim. He's 100% behind every word he speaks. His whole being is in every word that he speaks, that he sings. Such passion, you can hear it. And then the words are divine. All about God and loving God, your beloved. I will be thine always. And how God appears in the various realms of nature and the various parts of human existence as service and as bliss. There's something about these old recordings. The person who plays the harmonium is such an expert. The harmonium is breathing along with Yogananda. You can hear the expertness in the touch of the harmonium. And who is ever doing the drums does it perfectly. There are two drums. One is done perfectly. I learned to sing this, to chant this, both in English and in Bengali when I was 14. Never forgot them. Over the years, I remember them. But now I hear them again. And it's such a delight. Now prepare yourself to love these. Can we have "Oh God Beautiful" and "The Temple of Silence" with a pause in between? I wanted to tell you a little about my relationship with Robert, since the whole concept of guru-student relationship has come up for me again. I met Robert in 1989 at a little satsang he had in Beverly Hills. There must have been 5 or 6 people there. I don't know why I went. I hadn't gone to any satsang for years. I was done with spirituality. But I went, and I heard him speak. And I knew I had met my teacher. Afterwards, I went up to him and I said, "Robert, where have you been my entire life?" And he gave me that nonsense statement, "I've been around." You know, I don't think there was ever more than 35 people that went to his satsang. Maybe on a day that we had a festival, there'd be 40 or 45. And on Thursday nights, there'd be, even at the busiest, 25 people. And that was near the end before he left for Sedona. People came and people went. But like that one chant, only three of us stayed with him the entire time he was in Los Angeles. Mary Skane, Lee Scanlon, and I. Everybody else came and left. What's the matter, Lakshmi? Sometimes her mouth bothers her. And I would see him every Thursday for lunch. And other people would see him other lunch days for lunch. And I would drive him to satsang at least once and sometimes twice a week. So I got to see him quite a bit compared with other people. And you know, all that we all wanted to do was to be with Robert. If we could have been with him 24 hours a day, we would have been. And when lunch ended, I felt so bereft to have him return home, to open the door of my car and nearly fall over when he gets out because his balance was so poor. To greet him at the door for lunch, have him open the door, and there was a big smile on his face, and his dog would be there at his feet. I'd see Robert. I'd feel so happy. Then we'd drive to a little park nearby, Warner Park, and we'd walk around the park once. Dmitri wasn't with us, though. So it's lunchtime. And we just bullshit. Talk about whatever felt like talking about. Sometimes a deep question, but more often is, how are you? What are you doing? What's new? For both of us. And we'd sit at this concrete bench in the park and just hang out. And I was in bliss. I was happy to be with my teacher, my Robert. Then we go to lunch, Follow Your Heart. Or sometimes we'd go with an Indian family in that lived in our area, Canoga Park. And there was a five or six of them, and they were all Robert's devotees. And it was a family setting, and it was very nice for a long period of time. We went there. Then I get to pick him up to take him to satsang. I lived in Santa Monica. He lived in Woodland Hills. Satsang could be anywhere in the San Fernando Valley. So it was a lot of driving, but it was my pleasure to be driving the guru, my Robert, satsang. And then to lead satsang, sitting next to him on his right-hand side, putting a microphone cable on him, getting the cassette ready to play, to record his talk. And then he'd talk. After a bit of silence, he'd open his eyes and look around the room. Everybody was looking at him. On Sundays, he'd start with a joke. And Robert had rotten teeth, unbelievably. The repair estimate at one before he left would be $40,000, and that was in 1995. He had broken teeth and rotten teeth. But he'd start satsang on Sundays by making a big laugh. He'd grab his lips like this. Heart to get people to smile, and all of his ugly teeth would be showing. He didn't care. But we all wanted to be around him, his close students. That's all we wanted. And afterwards, we were good for shit. We couldn't function. I learned not to go back to work. I would have been useless at work. I just went home and went to bed. We all felt that way. None of us wanted to work. We just wanted to be like Robert and do nothing. And we told him this. And he said, be careful of what you wish for. You know, and I didn't work much for 15 years after that. No, 5 years. 5 years. I was supposed to take my test to be a psychologist, licensed psychologist in the state of California. Normally people said it takes 5-6 months to study for it. I sent away for the lesson material, and it was a box about 3 feet long. Must have been 10,000 pages of tests and information. And I just looked at that box and thought of taking off 6 months from doing psychotherapy and even being with Robert. And he said, don't do it. Stay by me. Stay with me. Don't take the test. And those of us around him got lazier and lazier. My mail piled up. I'll bet you sometimes it got to be a stack of paper, of mail 3 feet high. And I tell him about how overwhelmed I felt about all the mail. He says, if it's really important, they'll come get you. Just throw it away. Just throw the mail away. It's not important. He'd always say, just stay by me. Stay close to me. And we did. Three of us did. But it wasn't easy. We couldn't function. And we had to pay to help support the guru. And if you're not working, the money doesn't come in too much. Especially when he tells us, don't forget about getting licensed. Forget about opening all that mail. And on top of that, I don't know whether it was because of his teeth or because he had Parkinson's, it was hard for him to bathe. But he always had a smell, an odor, a bad odor. But ugly teeth or odor not, we just wanted to be around him. I can't say at that time I loved him. I just wanted to be around him all the time. It's hard to love because he was so empty. There's nobody really there. It was like loving an empty closet. But in that empty closet was so peaceful. And afterwards, the energies would just rip through my body. And I'd go into a kind of blank state. A state where I'd disappear. Consciousness would disappear. It felt like sleep, but it wasn't sleep. We all wanted to be in his presence. Be close to him. But again, it wasn't easy. He cooked us. He made it hard to be around him. He created situations around him that toasted everybody. Gave everybody the same exclusive job. And you'd show up one day and find out that there were five other people doing your exact job, and you were one of many, when before you thought you had an exclusive relationship with him. Sometimes we'd go to a movie. Sometimes he'd circulate rumors behind your back. Sometimes he'd just outright lie to you. Sometimes he told the same lies to several people. Sometimes he told different lies to different people. There is always chaos at satsang. And the worse it got, it seemed the more he liked it. He liked the drama. To see our egos come out, get burnt to a crisp, and want to leave him desperately. We wanted to leave him at times, but we couldn't. We were hooked. And now he's been dead 16 years this month. I love him more now than I ever loved him before. More than when I was with him. Now he's in me. I feel his presence. I used to feel it above me and behind me. Back in the early, in mid-2000s when I first started the website. But now he's within me. My Robert's within me. I love him so now. But then I didn't love him. I just wanted to be with him. In his presence. Feel his presence. You know, Robert was the real deal. But I was also around Muktananda for a couple of years. 2 or 3 years. 6 months when he was in LA, and then his successors, he died soon after. He left Los Angeles, and he appointed the successors, Nityananda and Chidvilasananda. And I was head of security for Los Angeles when they came into town. And the things I saw, what people want, would do to be around the guru. With Muktananda, some of them even swallowed his urine. They'd retrieve it from the toilet to incorporate him. He had two Rottweilers to keep people away because everybody wanted to touch the guru. They wanted a piece of him. They wanted to be with him. Thousands of people would come, sometimes 2,000 people a night, four abreast in Darshan line. And he'd hit him with the peacock feather. Some would be frozen in samadhi and ecstasy. Others would challenge him, but they had security all over to get rid of anybody that wanted to challenge him. The same with Chidvilasananda. Everybody wanted to be around her. They wanted to be near the guru. Hear the guru's voice. Even the rebuke. Just the tiniest morsel of being noticed by the teacher, by their teacher. Everyone was dying for the guru's love, recognition. Not me. I didn't care about them. This is before Robert. But I saw it. I saw the devotion. It didn't mean much back then to me. I just liked the chanting. And back then, my ego liked being up front with the Swamis and at Muktananda's feet, or Chidvilasananda's feet, or Nityananda's feet, protecting the guru with my security staff. We felt important. And the chanting was so sweet. There's always chanting in the ashram, the music in the background, but especially at Darshan. And at the beginning of the program, to have 1,000 people chanting, all one voice, call and response, men and women. One side would be the men, the other side would be the women. They call and respond to each other. Such bliss, such beauty, such profound intensity of love. And I guess with Muktananda, it was all about love. Feeling love for the teacher, feeling love for God, feeling love for each other. But Robert was more empty than that. It wasn't love. It wasn't even his sense of presence. Or maybe it was, but there was no sense of presence. There was just emptiness. And so much peace and comfort in that emptiness. Robert's words didn't mean much, especially the Sunday talks. He'd even come to the end of the talk and say, "I just made that up because you like to listen to concepts." It was just being in his presence, feeling that emptiness. It took away all the concepts, it took away all the pain. Took away all the emotions, took away all the loneliness. All of those were eaten up in the emptiness. But in the most important way, while we were focusing on Robert's emptiness or on Robert or on Muktananda, all the real stuff was happening within ourselves. Feeling Robert's emptiness made it so much easier to get into my own. Feeling the love around Muktananda made it so much easier for me to feel my own. What we feel towards the teacher, our guru, or our lover. Father or mother is really our own feelings. They kind of get magnified up when we're around a teacher because everybody else is feeling them too. The guru brings them out. It's when you go to a teacher, it's with a certain mindset. And given that mindset, it makes you receptive to different things you see in your teacher, or in your lover, or in your mother, or your father. Depending on your receptivity and your openness, you feel things in him or her because they are in you. And you may not be able to feel them otherwise. I never felt the love a lot of people felt for Robert. I felt the emptiness. I never felt anything towards Muktananda. But I love the satsang. I love the sangha. I love the community. The sweetness of the community. And look at us. We have our community. I'd like to change gears now and have a reading from Nisargadatta. I'm trying to cover this whole book. We've gone through about 31 pages so far, and there's another 120 pages to go. We'll do that tonight. I think this one today is extraordinary. Maharaj says, I've been advised by my doctors not to talk, therefore I'm not talking. This is in the middle of a talk. Question, is there a desire not to die and lose your body? Maharaj, the sage is not concerned with that. Here he's so aloof, talks about himself, the sage. The question, is there a desire of the body, not of the self? You may say something like that. This is the administrative action of that beingness. It is a very complicated riddle. You have to discard whatever you know, whatever you have read, and have a firm conviction about that which nobody knows anything. He's talking about the absolute, your true nature as a subject. You can't get any information about that, and that's capitalized. And about that, you must have firm conviction. How difficult it is. And that's because he's always saying, you're not the body. You're not the I am. You're beyond that. And he says you have to have a conviction that you are beyond that and unknowable. You can't have knowledge of what you are as subject. Most people reach that state which is, and he's talking about I amness or beingness. Most people reach that state which is, but nobody reaches that state which is not. It is very rarely that one can reach that state. It transcends all knowledge. Most essential is the knowledge I am. Now here he's changing gears. Very rare is one that can reach that state which is beyond the I am. It transcends all knowledge, but then he changes back. Most essential is the knowledge I am. Claim it. Appropriate it as your own. If that is not there, nothing is. That I am is not there. Nothing is. Without the I am consciousness, there is no world. There is no knowledge. There is no existence. Without your I am, nothing is. If that is not there, nothing is. Knowledge of all stages, of all the stages, will be obtained only with the aid of this knowledge I am. Knowledge of all the stages of existence, from objects in existence, to the I am, to consciousness itself, to that which lies beyond consciousness, is only obtained through the aid of this knowledge I am. From the absolute no-knowing state, spontaneously this consciousness I am has appeared. There is no reason, no cause. Spontaneously it has come with the waking state, deep sleep state, the five elements, the three gunas, and prakriti and purusha, matter and spirit. Then it embraces the body as itself and therefore identifies as a male or a female. This I amness has its own love to be. It wants to remain, to perpetuate itself, but it is not eternal. Let me repeat that. From the absolute, no knowing state, and that's the one you can't know about in any way, shape, or form because it's the subject. It can't be an object of knowledge. From the absolute no-knowing state, spontaneously, this consciousness, I am, has appeared. There is no reason, no cause. Spontaneously, it has come with the waking state, deep sleep state, the five elemental play, the three gunas, prakriti, and purusa. Then it embraces the body. It identifies with the body, with your body, as itself. It identifies with the body as itself. I am takes on the identity of the body and therefore identifies as a male or female. This I amness has its own love to be. It wants to remain, to perpetuate itself, but it is not eternal. This passing show may be likened to the following situation. Suppose I was well all along, then suddenly I was sick, and the doctor gave me medicine. After 3 days, my fever was gone. So this stage of fever for 3 days is like the I am consciousness. Exactly like that. A passing show. A time-bound state. This principle loves to be, and one must not belittle it. It is a very godly principle. This I amness contains the entire cosmos. Your I amness, your consciousness, which identifies with the body, actually contains the entirety of the cosmos. It is said that all of this is unreal. When is it certified as unreal? Only when one understands this temporary phase, and in the process of understanding, one is in the absolute, and from there recognizes this is a temporary unreal state. It's really important. It is said that all of this, the cosmos, is unreal. The body is unreal. When is it certified as unreal? When do you recognize it is unreal? Only when one understands that this is a temporary phase. And in the process of understanding, one is in the absolute. And from there recognizes this is a temporary unreal state. So who is it that recognizes that the I am and everything is just a passing state? It is the absolute. It is you as subject. You, the transcendental one, that recognizes all of this around you. The coming and going of consciousness, it is a temporary state. It is the absolute that recognizes this. And once you recognize it, you recognize that you're in the absolute state. You're the unchanging one. You're the one that recognizes the coming and going because you are permanent and eternal. And untouched by consciousness. This is the crux of his teachings. In my present state, I am not able to talk much. The difficulty is that you have been accepting this as real, and I have to disprove this, and a lot of talking has to be done by me, which I am not in a position to do now. So, you go now. Do bhajans, that is, chant. One more time. It is said that all of this is unreal. Robert used to say it all the time. It's all illusion. It's all appearance. It's all a mirage. Everything you see, hear, taste, and touch, the body is unreal. The furniture is unreal. The walls are unreal. All the things that you see around you are unreal. The thoughts are unreal. Nothing has substance. But he's saying something different. When is it made unknown? When is it certified that all of this is unreal? Where did that come from? Where did this concept that everything is unreal come from? Or where do you know it? When do you really know it? Only when one understands this temporary phase. When one understands that everything just passes. It comes and goes. It comes and goes. And in the process of that understanding, one is in the absolute. This is an understanding. This is the knowledge of the absolute about what it is seeing and perceiving about the nature of reality. And from there, recognizes this is a temporary unreal state. Who is it that recognizes the temporary eternal state? Well, it can only be that which is permanent, eternal. Only that which is in rest and is not moving itself can recognize the movement of consciousness and sees it's just a passing thing and sees that it is separate from me. The coming and going of consciousness is seen by me, who is removed from the coming and going of consciousness. It's an object to me. I witness it. I see it's coming and going. I see it's impermanent. And who is this I that sees the impermanence? This is the absolute I, the absolute, the one who does not change and therefore recognizes change. This is the one who sees consciousness saying, I am. This is the I at the center of I am, going deeply, deeply beyond consciousness, into the root, into the absolute, which cannot be known itself, and from which you know, and from which you act. That's page 32. Now on page 33. For you, I am expounding very secret knowledge about your own beingness, how it came about. That is what I'm talking about. This play is just happening. You're not playing a part. When you are ignorant, you think you are playing a part in this manifest world. There is no one working deliberately. It is happening spontaneously. You cannot claim anything in this process. When you are thoroughly knowledgeable, you will come to the conclusion that this beingness is also an illusion. There is no one working deliberately. It is happening spontaneously. You cannot claim anything in this process. Now, the question, who recognizes that it is illusion or ignorance? And this is the crucial question. Maharaj, only that one recognizes or witnesses all that is... Let me see, that sentence doesn't make sense. Who recognizes that it is illusion or ignorance? Only that one recognizes or witnesses all that as ignorance. Only that one, the absolute, the unchanging, the pure sentience element of we are sentience, the cognizer, awareness. Only that one recognizes or witnesses all that is in ignorance. That one cannot understand that one. That one cannot understand that one. He can only witness and understand the ignorance. He can only witness and understand only the ignorance. The one who recognizes all of this as ignorance, that one is knowledgeable. The one who recognizes all of this as ignorance, that one is knowledgeable. That's the basic I, the basic absolute me, is knowledgeable. And the knowledge is the I am, which flowers out of the absolute. Why are you calling me Yanni and listening to my talks? Because I have recognized and understood that child ignorance, the I amness, and have transcended that. Finally, you have to understand that the principle which you are using to talk, to move about, and operate in the world is not you. In other words, the I amness, the consciousness, the body, is not you. It's the knower of you. Okay. Now for a musical interlude. Power of chanting. Some of you even chant. You know, it really helps to start out by chanting. And after a while, you can't chant anymore. And the ecstasy and the emptiness whirls through you. But it helps really to chant, especially if the words are so easy, like Hare Krishna and Hare Ram. They're really easy. Just do that for the first 5 or 6 minutes. Get carried away. Get carried away. And when you get carried away chanting, then the chanting takes over you and does the rest. But if you just sit and listen passively, it feels beautiful, but it doesn't have the power as if you actually chanted yourself and put some of your own heart into it. But anyway, time has come to end this satsang. I love you all, and I know you all love me. One big happy family. If we lived together, of course, it'd be squabbling constantly, but it's great. I think there was about one of us for every 500 square miles in the North American continent, or 5,000 square miles. A lot of space between us. Take care. I love you all. Bye-bye.